What the Tech is brought to you by Text Expander. Text Expander helps you communicate smarter. Visit textexpander.com/podcast for 20% off your first year. Everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarian. Of course, I'm joined by Mr. Paul Theriot. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good. How are you?
Paul, I am doing wonderful. This is the second time Paul and I have spoken today.
Right.
He guided me through my insanity around 11 o'clock this morning, which I kind of wanted to. I wasn't planning on talking about it, but it kind of brought me into a spiral of thought, I guess.
Of self-loathing.
I seem to, and a lot of people like this too, with all the information that we're provided about everything that we kind of purchase, any kind of purchase, big purchase, small purchase, we kind of second guess ourselves with the decisions we make. We do. And I kind of envy the people that look at something on Amazon. They're like, yeah, that looks cool. I'm going to buy it.
Done.
We're not doing it. Done. And they're happy. Yep. They're happy because they did not see the negativity that goes along with it. So I kind of want to talk about that because I bought a TV, and you guys will be very surprised when I tell you what TV I purchased, because this is totally against my way of purchasing TVs. I go against my recommendation of buying. I always recommend people to buy an inexpensive, decent mid-range TV, right? And because the technology on these television sets are changing so often. Nobody's hanging on to these things for 20 years like maybe your parents did. You know, having a TV for 10 years was a normal thing in my house growing up. I had a Hitachi, at a 26-inch Hitachi when I was a kid. I'm going back to the 80s, and that TV lasted until, like, the HD days in my house. So think about, I mean, probably 15, 20 years, more than that maybe. Yeah, 2000 and, let's say, 1988 they bought that TV. Probably went all the way to 2004. So that, I mean, that's a significant amount of time to have a television. But by today's standards, people are swapping TVs every other year. Some people, I mean, I'm not saying that that's the right way to do it, but depending on the technology that comes out, your purchasing of television, it's rapid. So I kind of wanted to talk about that. But before I do, I want to really suggest and recommend you guys all go to Theriot.com. A lot of the show topics that we discuss here come exclusively from Theriot.com. Obviously, we incorporate other sites too. But
not
this
so much
is my,
the TV topic. Not, but
no, the TV topic, no. Which maybe it could be a topic. It'll be on Theriot.com because the show's posted on there. But I get my daily tech information. The first thing I do, I go to Theriot.com. And I'm not saying this because Paul's a friend. I probably would still say it. But I most likely would still say it because it's the easiest way for me to consume the top stories that I'm interested in without having to go through ads and go through clickbaity stories. You know, you and Brad do an unbelievable job, and everybody else on the site. You guys work really hard. And a way to kind of give back for the amazing content that you guys get, that give on the website, is by signing up for Theriot Premium. You could join Theriot Premium right now. You could explore the benefits. It's $55 annually, $7 a month, and you get access to all these extra bonus articles that Paul writes, the podcast, to the forum, to support even on the site. You get access to all these great articles on there, and it's a great read. And a lot of times, a lot of the deep dive topics that we discuss come exclusively from Theriot.com. And you guys could kind of, it's almost like a companion article to the topics we're discussing. I want to give a shout out. Obviously, Paul hates it when I plug his website here on the show. He gets very uncomfortable with any kind of advertising for himself. So, but I do it because Paul doesn't pay me to do it. That's why. If he paid me to do it, I would say, no, Paul, I'm not doing it. But I really enjoy the website, and I wanted to give it a little shout-out before we begin and dive into a series of topics here, which we'll be touching on a lot of stuff from Theriot. So this morning, oh, by the way, we got a $5 donation here, Paul, on YouTube. This is amazing. This is the beauty of the internet. He's presented a question, which I will answer at the end of the show, because this is a great question about foldables. So I want to kind of sit on that, and we'll discuss it at the end of the show. Great subject. So let's. I want to dive into this because it was a It was a very last minute decision for me to purchase this TV. We're going to be doing a lot of watch alongs on the wrestling show that we do on Mat Men, Rich and I. And the way that we've been doing it is on a 14 inch HP laptop. So pretty much what I do, I pivot it to kind of face both of us, and we're all sitting like this sideways doing these watch alongs. And obviously, we're making some money with these. So I thought I would invest it into buying a TV. It would be sitting in my office. So it's not a, you know, something I'm going to be using to watch, you know, film and cinema and really need the details of the black levels to be perfect and everything else. So I went on Amazon, and the first thing I did was put in 50-inch TV, HDR. So very 50-inch. I'm going to do it right now with you guys. Inch TV, HDR. So the suggestion that I got, Paul, and I don't know, were you surprised when I told you what the TV was?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I guess it could have been anything. I was mostly surprised just by the price.
It's a Hisense.
Yeah.
Which wouldn't be my normal
pick. Hisense is like isn't that a Huawei brand? I think it's...
Is it a Huawei brand? It could be.
They have a lot of high whatever brand type thing.
You know what they're associated with? What's that that Google TV box that you got? The Xiaomi, right? Wasn't it a Xiaomi?
Oh, Xiaomi? Yeah, the Mi box.
The Mi box, yeah.
Is that what it is?
Because pretty much there's a Mi box inside of this thing.
Okay.
Nearly identical specs. So I got a Hisense 50H8F, 50-inch 4K Ultra HD TV, HDR 10. And it's $329. I had about $200 in Amazon credits, and I had a bunch of donations. So pretty much the TV was free for me. But I didn't want to really spend money, and I wanted to get one of these lower-end, newer TVs that are out there. Because right now, I have a Vizio that I paid $1,400 for in my bedroom, and right. I have a Samsung. I have another Vizio that I paid like $1,200 in my living room. So I don't want to spend the money, but I wanted to get all the bells and whistles. And this one really seemed to be the one that really gave the most bang for your buck. And it is interesting how these TVs are very competitive in pricing and quality. And are people buying these TVs? Is this the TV that people are buying, or are they still going for the higher end devices?
I don't know. You remember we talked about how, you know, different brands kind of come and go. Like Vizio was the big brand at Costco for a while, and now it's something else. We had a TCL or whatever. I feel like these guys are just in that category. You know, that TV technology has been become commoditized. It's all made in China, so these Chinese companies can come up. They can just ship them the same quality product for a lot less money.
Because they're making the parts to begin with.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. So I'm going to be getting this thing next 2 days, and I'm going to mount it on the TV and on the wall and everything. But this is my first dive into a cheaper television. And this thing is bezel-less. If you take a look at
it. Yeah, I know, they're tiny. It is really nice looking.
It's a ULED technology. That's what they're calling it.
It's like OLED, but it's the Chinese version.
It's OLED, but with a U and not an O. it has wide color gamut. Yeah. It has full array local dimming, motion rate of 240, which we Paul and I were talking about. It's not 240 hertz.
It looks, yeah, no, not at 4K. It's not.
Not at 4K. It's 60. It's 60 hertz at 4K, obviously. But
yeah.
And then it has a high view chipset. And the research that I did, it's about a 1.8 quad core chip in this thing, which is not bad considering what you're buying. For $329, you know, it's not a bad get. So I got this TV, but what I was thinking is, Paul, do you remember the day you walked into a store and you just bought it? You just thought about, you're like, okay, that's the one I like, and I'm gonna buy it. And you really didn't
TV? Yeah. I have never done that. No,
you never walked in there and just bought a TV.
Nope.
How do you think people go and buy TVs?
How do I think they do it?
No. I'm talking about normal people, not you.
Yeah, no, obviously. Right. How do I think normal people? Well, yeah. I would hope there's some amount of research or whatever, at least price comparisons on your phone if you're in a store or something. But I bet a lot of people do walk into a Best Buy, compare them up on the wall, and make a purchase that way. It's nice to be able to do something like that in person, but the truth is the lighting in a Best Buy is not conducive to understanding how a TV is going to look in your house.
No, no.
And they, those things may not be set up correctly and may look worse than they can look. You know, you have no way of knowing.
I honestly, I think people just purchase it on price and size.
Yeah,
they think the bigger and cheaper it is, the better of a deal it is, when in reality that's not the case.
Yeah.
The other thing that I noticed, which was fascinating, is that the minus 50-inch TV is practically gone. You could get a 32-inch TV, but those like 44-inch, 46-inch, 42-inch TVs, they really are hard to come by. It's only maybe like TCL that makes a 36-inch or 32-inch, or maybe like another manufacturer, but it's very limited to purchase TV at that size.
It's got to be the money thing, because your TV was $350-ish, you know, 50-inch. Why would somebody pay the same price for a 42-inch or whatever? I mean, you know, the market has kind of spoken. That's where TVs are humongous. You know, the TV that I have, which is probably 55 inches or 60 or something, I don't remember. You know, in that room, I could have a much bigger TV, but, I mean, I'm not going to replace something that is working. But, you know, when the time comes, I'm not going to go smaller, I can tell you that. I mean, I think that's just the way the market, if you, I don't know. Again, like, I think if you walked into a Costco or Best Buy, you'd see some smaller options, but the majority of it is all on the other end, of the spectrum. You know?
Yeah, I think the newer, well, also think about how much it's costing them to manufacture a 50-inch compared to a 46-inch, and how many they're going to sell. It's cheaper for them to keep bulk producing the displays at a size that's going to sell. But, you know, a couple of years ago, about 6-7 years ago, 46-inch was the desirable size for a larger TV for most people.
When I was a kid, 19 inches was considered big for a TV.
Was it? I remember 30 inches.
I mean, you wouldn't even buy a computer monitor that small.
My parents had a projector, a 42-inch projector, square projector TV. And
320 by 240 or something.
It was pushed into the wall, you know? Mm-hmm. It looked like crap. It was terrible. Yeah. It was such a terrible TV, but it was big.
Yep.
It was a big TV, and that's what people wanted. It was literally just projecting a small screen on a giant display.
One of my strong memories is a friend of mine, and this would have been like almost 30 years ago, it had bought I actually don't remember the kind of the TV, but it was a widescreen. No, it wasn't. I'm sorry. I guess it was still square back then, but you had DVDs and they could be widescreen or whatever, but they would have the bands and he would expand the picture so it filled the screen.
So because he wanted
everything on the screen. Like he wanted to use all of the screen. And I was like, dude, you realize this looks nothing like the movie. Yeah. But he's like, I don't care. That's what I just want it to look like.
I just want it zoomed in on the person's face.
I know it's nuts. Yeah. So I mean, I always thought that was just weird.
But. You know what else I thought about when I was doing this research? Do you remember EDTVs? They were a thing for about a year and a half.
No. What was the distinction there?
Enhanced definition TVs.
Enhanced definition.
They weren't enhanced HD from TVs. What? They weren't HD TVs. They were EDTVs.
Okay. Were they, the same resolution as a DVD or something? Or?
They were technically, yes. And all they were widescreen standard definition TVs.
Yeah. So like 720 by 480 or whatever that is. Yeah, I could see that.
Wide, which was bizarre.
Yeah, widescreen. Yep.
Yeah, which was really weird to see that it wasn't HD, it was 80. And my mother-in-law bought one, and I kept telling her, she's like, I bought this HD TV. I'm like, it's not HD. It's just a widescreen standard definition. Oh, because
this
television.
Is its widescreen, so they thought it was,
Yeah, which was interesting.
Yeah.
I want to touch on this. I'm getting a TV in a day or two, which is amazing if you think about that. The TV is going to be here tomorrow, and I'll have it mounted on my wall the next day. And I'll give you guys a quick review of it once I put it up, because I'm really curious on it. And I like the fact that it has Android TV on it, and I've been wanting to play around with the latest, I think it's Android TV 8 that it comes with. Mm-hmm. I'm You'll not sure if that's the latest or not.
Huh? You'll hate it.
I'll probably hate it. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I put in EDTV, EdTV, the movie comes up. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm seeing now for EDTV.
Right, right.
Enhanced definition.
Enhanced definition
TV. Let's see.
I think
what
we added a few pixels on the right.
All right. So the term referred to the capability of displaying 480 lines or 576 yeah. line signal and progressive scan. Yeah, it was a 480p TV. But yeah,
that was DVD. DVD.
That
quality.
Was DVD. It was DVD quality TV, essentially. What right. a stupid thing. What a really dumb thing. Yeah. Amazing. Amazing that they scammed so many people with this. So I wanted to touch on an article you have on Therat.com, and I thought that this is fascinating, and we've been talking about this for a while. And that's a story that was reported by 9to5 Mac that Apple's reportedly planning an ARM-powered Mac by 2021.
Right.
This is something we've touched on, considering the fact that Apple does make their own chipsets, and yeah. they have teased the idea of kind of going forward with this. But the company is reported to take more of an aggressive look and funding for R&D for production on a 5-nanometer processor. What incredible. Do you think of this? I want to know, do you think this is a good idea for Apple to do, to kind of leave Intel on some of their devices?
I mean, I think it's inevitable. This is something we've been talking about for a while. There's also something fascinating. I probably discussed this previously, but if you haven't ever watched this and you're interested in this kind of stuff, Ave Tavanian, who was probably the chief technology officer or whatever when Steve Jobs took over Apple, and he was previously from Next, helped design the Mach kernel that was used in Mac OS X later on, obviously helped design Next Step and OpenStep and then Mac OS X. Genius guy, great guy. There's a set of interviews. There's two interviews with him. I think it's from the Computer History Museum that's on YouTube. And one of the things he discusses is Apple's transition from PowerPC to Intel. And how it was, they had said, it's going to take us, I don't remember what the time frame, 2 years or something, and they did it in a year and a half or whatever the time frame they stated, they did it much more quickly. And everyone was really blown away by how easily or it seemed that they were able to transition between platforms. But what Tavanian says in this interview is, the thing that people don't understand is we had been building Mac OS X on Intel ever since there was a Mac OS X. So it really wasn't that hard for Apple to do because they had been doing it all along. They just hadn't shipped it publicly. My suspicion is that because of the way Apple is and with their, they bought the company that made their processors. They've been revving them in-house essentially ever since. They're widely regarded as being the best or among the best, certainly ARM processors in the world, that they have been looking at making this transition for years and years, and that they've been running some version or versions of Mac OS on the A series chips for a long time. And so because Apple controls this, they can of course make modified versions of these chips that are better tailored toward Macs. We'll see, for this to work, they have to do what they did with that transition from PowerPC to Intel, which is make sure provide some way for the existing software to work, even if it's a little slower, emulated, or runs in a container or some kind of semi-virtualized environment or whatever it is. But they have to be able to run today's stuff. Microsoft has worked with Qualcomm to bring Windows 10, obviously, to ARM chips, and they have to emulate Intel software there. So there's some precedent for it. And on the flip side, we've seen Apple has done the thing where they run iOS apps on the Mac, and iOS apps obviously are, geared for ARM chips, the A series chips, whatever. So, we have examples of that working in both directions. I think they're going to do a good job at it. Like, this is the type of thing they handle pretty well.
I mean, the biggest thing is software that runs on Intel, essentially, right? Yeah. So all their heavy duty software like Photoshop and whatever else you're using on the Mac, right? That's the big question, because anything that's Apple built, like their movies app, their photos app, their browser, even third party Mac store applications like the Twitter app that's now being merged in from iOS and everything else, that's going to be an easy transition for them, and they really shouldn't be too many hiccups considering the fact that they're working close with that software.
Yeah,
the hiccup would be everything else.
Yeah. So in the Windows world, one of the hiccups moving between Intel and ARM is 64-bit support. So the ARM stuff has been 64-bit for a while. That's true on Apple's as well, obviously. The emulation today only runs 32-bit software. So a lot of the more advanced software is 64-bit only, like Photoshop. So That does present a problem. I am sure, Apple being Apple, that they won't make this transition until they have full support for the whole line. I mean, we'll have to work with 64-bit software as well. In fact, I don't know as much about the Mac, but I would imagine the Mac transitioned to 64-bit only some number of years ago, and at some point, if it hasn't already happened, but sometime soon, they won't even support 32-bit software, I would imagine. I mean, it's something like that, I'm sure, but so they'll have to figure that out either way.
Yeah, to be honest, you know, obviously you could kind of predict how they're going to merge this in, right? They're going to the MacBooks are going to become the new ARM chipset.
Yeah,
you're going to have, which that'll create some confusion if at all not all applications run properly.
Well, I don't know. Like, they don't sell the base MacBook anymore, but if they did, and you bought one of those machines, and it would come with less RAM and maybe it came with slower storage or whatever it is. Like, I guess you could run, you know, Photoshop on it, but it would probably run kind of slow, I guess.
But you're not really running. You're not using that computer.
Yeah, you're not generating videos and stuff. I mean, the expectations are a little lower. By the way, the other thing that no one really is talking about that I've seen is Apple also has the opportunity to simply use both chips in a machine, right? So the lower end MacBooks, MacBook Airs, whatever, could run just the A series chips. And then the higher end Pro devices, maybe they have both, you know.
Well,
there might be
this?
Some processing advantages to that.
I'm going to tell you what's overlooked in the story. And then I saw one person maybe write about this, but kind of hinted at it. But this chipset that they're going to be doing, this ARM based chipset, which they're going to make in house for the Mac devices, they don't have a MacBook anymore. This is going to be the return of the MacBook.
Yeah, it could be. Yep.
I mean, 100% it's going to be a return of the MacBook, and that's what they're probably going to start off with. That it's going to be running this
portless Mac, you know?
USB port.
Yeah,
everything will be portless, and they'll have this very thin device, fanless, portless, whatever it is. And that'll be their, step above an iPad, essentially. But by the time they get to a MacBook Pro, they're really going to have to iron out all those kinks and have, Photoshop support and video and, you know, Final Cut support and Adobe Premiere support. All that stuff is going to be a necessity.
Yes, but I mean, even look, the difference between Apple and Microsoft, one of the many differences is in their approach. You can see it in the approach to this thing. So Microsoft puts this stuff out early. The early versions of the chipsets on the Qualcomm side that support this are terrible. In fact, the very first version was literally a smartphone chip. They start making custom versions of it just for PCs. They're still terrible. Microsoft this past fall released their first customized version of a Qualcomm chip under their own brand. It's okay, but it still doesn't run 64-bit stuff. Apple would never put people through that kind of a thing. I mean, Apple certainly puts people through other things, but Apple would never release product like that. Apple will release this only when it works. It just works. You know, there's not going to be some half-assed version like, well, this one will be really slow, and then there'll be a few more generations, and they're going to be really slow, and then eventually it'll be fine. Like, the first version has to just work.
Like the MacBook Air? Like the MacBook Air, the first one?
Well, I mean, the first MacBook Air didn't take off, but it was still fine. Functional, for what it was. Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, it was expensive, and that might have been like a core, what do you call those things? A core solo processor, if I remember correctly, maybe, or something like that. But
people need to remember, that first MacBook Air was competing in the era of the netbook, and it was far ahead of a netbook.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was also five times as expensive. But,
yeah.
But that, you know, whatever. But the point is, that is how they'll do it. And by the way, this could be, a lot of people are, I've seen the speculation. Well, does this mean we're going to see like low cost MacBooks because, you know, they make the chips? Like, no. Like, no, this is going to be it's going to be a different kind of device. They'll position it in a certain way. Like if you're a professional, if you're recording video, if you're doing Photoshop, whatever, you're not going to get this. Gamers, no, this is not for you. But if you're a normal college student, maybe, and you live in a browser and you're doing email and just, you know, the regular office apps, or better yet, the Apple iLife, whatever they call them these days, apps, this will work fine for you. And I think that's the goal. But no, it's not going to be $500. It will still be $1,500 and up. But we see premium PC devices like this too. You know, the super thin fanless, they don't perform as well, but they're really pretty. they're still expensive. I mean, it's a style thing.
It is. So I'm curious to see how long they're saying within the next 14 to 18 months is the reward.
Yeah. Yep.
Currently, that they're going to have something on the market, and obviously it'll be longer for the higher end devices. But it's I see this being more than just a chip in a current MacBook Air. I think this is going to be a brand new device, and maybe a line of devices that are running the ARM chipset, all different sizes.
Yeah, I mean I would I would just say that I don't expect them to use the same exact chips that are in their phones.
No, absolutely not.
You know, they'll split it, and it, you know, they'll maybe the cores are a little different, or they'll amp up the performance. The battery life obviously is not going to be as good, but the you know, they'll need it for the performance, and you know, we'll see where it lands. But I think it's going to be a different branch.
Well, yeah. We also don't know what's going to happen with the coronavirus and everything during manufacturing.
Then maybe that's what I have, and I don't have to worry. I won't be around next week, so it's
maybe
okay.
That's what it is. We don't know. I don't know if it's contagious over digital or not.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Actually, it's from China. So
this goes over to the copper lines, yeah, like in Gremlins. Yeah, remember?
That's how they get you. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's like in Gremlins. So another story you had on Therat.com was Microsoft shares the official Xbox Series X specs. That's out now. So we know what this is going to be.
Right.
The new details of the next generation. Expect more stuff, obviously, at E3. But from looking at this, Paul, is there anything that you didn't cover or we did not cover on this device?
The only thing that really matters, that should matter to anybody, is, well, two things. First of all, yes, it's an Xbox One. It's going to be completely backward compatible with everything it runs on an Xbox One. So it's four generations of software. Whatever is in backwards compatibility or whatever works on Xbox One will work on this new device. And so I think that's super important. And then, I mean, you can talk specific specifications, but the important bit is it is kind of what we've been saying for a long time, which is 4K all the time, 60 frames a second, and then it will run 8K. And 8K is sort of like, you know, where compromise is set in, where, as was the case on the Xbox One X with 4K, developers will be able to choose between frame rate, resolution, and, you know, according to the needs of the game. But realistically, what we're looking at here is 4K 60 frames all the time across the board, and that's what this generation needs to be. So I think that makes, you know, tons of sense.
It's also 12 teraflops, Paul.
Yeah, which is whatever that means.
You know, so
what is that in horsepower?
I know. How do you compare that to horsepower? So there's actually, if you go on that article on Therat.com, there's a really interesting forum conversation happening in the comments section. Where really? People are talking about, they're talking about like the NVIDIA GTX 2070 Super. It provides nine teraflops to the computer, it's a $500 card. So an RTX 2080, for example, is 11 teraflops. So the fact that this is putting out 12 teraflops, you know, how do you measure, what does that necessarily mean in terms of the Xbox? Because it's a very different way to look at it when you're comparing a computer to this standalone console.
Well, for one thing, those are just graphics cards.
Yeah. Right?
So we don't really think in terms of teraflops with PCs. Like, nobody's comparing PCs in that way. But your PC has some baseline frequency and performance metric, whatever it is, and then graphics capabilities on top of that. So I people are going to compare this to a PC, of course, because they have to. But the real comparison, the important comparison maybe, is between this and previous generation consoles. So obviously, maybe not obviously, but in case people didn't know, I mean, you know, the previous gen, the current gen, Xbox One X is more powerful than a PlayStation 4 Pro. It looks like the Xbox Series X is going to be more powerful than a PlayStation 5, but that hasn't helped them sell more. So, you know, whatever that means, more powerful, you know, more graphics fidelity, more games in 4K at 60 frames, whatever that works out to be, Microsoft will tell you it's like 2X performance improvement over the Xbox One X.
Do you think the Xbox always plays catch up to the PlayStation?
So to be honest, for most of the previous gen, and that's Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, the Xbox actually outsold the PlayStation for most of that generation. In fact, if you look at it as a kind of a 10, maybe an 8 to 10 year span or whatever, 8 years, 7 to 8 years of active life, for most of that, the Xbox was winning. Now, if you look at it today, what you'll discover is that in the end, the PlayStation 3 actually ended up outselling the Xbox 360. Not by a lot. You know, they were both north of 80 million units.
I mean, but the PlayStation 3 was a Blu-ray player, so.
Yeah, and it was more expensive. That was part of the problem. And I think that is what kind of hurt it in the beginning. It was more expensive. And I think what hurt the Xbox One in the beginning was the expense. And that's interesting because the conversation we're having right now is that same conversation again. You just mentioned how much those video cards cost. Well, given that, how much could an Xbox One Series X cost? Could it be $500? Could it be $600? And the answer is, yeah, it could be one of those things for sure. And is the world ready for that much, you know, for that high a cost? They weren't when the Xbox One shipped. That was $500 originally because they bundled the Kinect. They were trying to get, you know, they were trying to ensure for developers that everyone had a Kinect, and thus it was not risky to write Kinect games. But the Kinect never really took off.
Yeah.
And neither did the Xbox One in the beginning because it was too expensive. So they eventually fixed that problem, but they never really recovered. I don't think that's the only thing. People talk about the marketing of it, how it was marketed as kind of a all-in-one media player as well as a console. I don't really think that had anything to do with it. People will talk about game exclusives, and I think that might have had something to do with it. You know, Sony has always done a really good job of marketing their exclusive games, but whatever the combination of factors is, the Xbox One today is believed to be somewhere around 50% of the PlayStation 4. And that's not, you know, it's still tens of millions of units. It's still good, but it's not what happened last time for sure.
Yeah. I'm looking at sales, total sales. By the way, this is something interesting, right? Mm-hmm. This current generation Nintendo Switch has sold 52 million consoles.
Yeah. Yeah.
As of December 31st, 2019.
It's only been in the market for like, what, three years or something?
That's an astronomical number when you consider what a failure the Wii was, the Wii U was.
The Wii U, the Wii was a huge success.
The Wii U sold only 13.5 million devices. The Wii sold,
it was 100. Wii sold 40 or something. It was crazy.
Let's continue. These numbers are really, I got to do the math here. 101 million.
101. So PlayStation 3, PlayStation, or Xbox 360 were somewhere north of 80.
84 and 87.
Yeah. And we know that, so that's close. I mean, we call that a tie, whatever.
It's fascinating, right? Because it sold so many. So let's look at Xbox. Let's look at PlayStation
4. But the PlayStation 4. We know is over 100 million units right now. Yeah. I don't remember the exact number, but still going. It's over 100 million. But it slowed dramatically, right? So because you know we're how many years in are we? 8 years or something. So the interesting thing about the Nintendo Switch to me is it's only been in the market for a short period of time.
Yeah,
they've already sold half as. I mean, they've potentially outsold the Xbox One.
You know what's interesting about them? Everybody thinks it's inexpensive, right? Everybody thinks that the PlayStation's inexpensive. I'm sorry, the Nintendo, Switch. Yeah. But their market tactic is fascinating. You have a low entry point for the console. The games are obviously $54, $60, $70, whatever the typical gaming price, right? But all the apparel that you need to buy. So if you want to play a game, it's very difficult doing it on that controller. You're going to have to get the Pro Controller, which is like $50. Right. You're going to need two of those. So that's, $100 right there. You're going to need an adapter for that. The cost is not built in.
This is like a lot of conversations about different things. Like people talk about, cord cutting isn't as cheap as people think. Or I would compare this to like an Apple product. You know, you're kind of buying into a system or a community is not really the right word, but You know, the Nintendo stuff's just going to work. this thing was graphically speaking, this thing was kind of laughable when it launched. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. The market doesn't care. So
I love my Nintendo Switch.
Yeah. I mean, you don't really find people that are ambivalent about it. people tend to love it.
You know why? it's an easy thing. If I got a couple people over, and we do this all the time. I got a couple friends over. We're having a couple drinks. Somebody says, you want to play Mario? You have Mario Kart. Yep. All right. The wives start playing. We start playing. Sure. It's two buttons you're playing with.
All right. But now imagine you had like a tower gaming rig in your living room. You could do the same thing. It'd be exactly as easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. Hold on. Let me load up Windows.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Let's connect.
Let's connect the controllers
to USB. Hold on, guys. No, hold on. Windows updates quick these days. This will be fine. Oh, the NVIDIA GeForce thing has to update.
And then USB drive. Yeah, hold on. My USB, it's not working. I got to plug it in the back.
Well, no, look. I mean, Nintendo's selling an experience. I mean, so yeah, it may not be as cheap as people think, but I think people buy it in the safety and understanding that this thing's going to work fine all the time, and it will for a long time.
Listen, I think the casual user is outnumbering the pro user at this point with computers.
Oh,
before,
yeah.
About 15, 20 years ago, you know, I always tell the story and people think it's crazy. My parents in 1988 went and bought a Tandy, a Tandy 2500 XL. And you know what they did? They put it in my bedroom as a five-year-old.
Wow.
They said, here you go. My parents don't know how to use a computer. They said, learn.
Right.
I had a book on DOS.
Yeah.
And I literally from
potentially
like,
spiral bound.
I have it actually. It's somewhere in one of these drawers. It's a introduction to MS-DOS and your kids and it's a book about kids using Diskmate, which was the OS, I guess, the on top of DOS.
Like a shell on top of DOS.
Yeah. On how to use Diskmate. And I remember reading that book and learning how to do everything. I was a kid, and I would log into Prodigy. My dad would tell me during the Gulf War to print out, go to Prodigy, and look up the airplanes that the military is using, and I would print it out on my dot matrix printer.
Right.
I was a kid. I was 7 years old, 6 years old. Now, you think like, oh, wow, that's a lot. You knew so much. My kids know how to do everything on an iPad. My kids are 2 and 3. They're able to, I mean, they know where YouTube is and they know which video they want to click on and they know, you know, what opens the Photos app and they know how to FaceTime my mother.
Sure.
You know, it's amazing now, but before it was difficult. So I had the privilege and the amazing ability to learn and kind of teach myself how to use a computer. And even when I was a teenager, other kids weren't using computers. It wasn't a thing. And I grew up, you know, technically I'm a millennial. You boomer.
I'm technically not a boomer, but thank you.
I got called a boomer the other day, and I yelled at him on YouTube. I said, hey, you nitwit, I'm 36.
Right.
And calling them a nitwit kind of proved their point, too. But I think it's interesting how, you know, everything is a casual product now. You know, how many years have we spoken about the holdup for Media Center?
Right.
How many people were? I mean, this was a topic, Paul. People were angry.
Yeah, but that's, you know, this is one of those things. In retrospect, you could have anticipated that was never going to fly because Media Center was a PC product. It was complex, lots of wires, lots of
TV
configuration.
Tuners, yeah,
it doesn't work. You know, like, you know, you talk about your kids and iPads. I mean, they could use the iPad to watch TV shows too. It'd be easy. But they're never going to figure out IR blasting on a Motorola set-top box that blah, 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 blah. You go on it.
But they don't need to.
It was just always going to fail.
Everything that we tried. I mean, there was all these services that we were talking about even 5 years ago. It's all there now. It's here. All that stuff we were trying to do in Media Center, we were trying to do, you know, we now have Roku boxes that have DVR support and they have tuner support, and you could tie them in with us with a over the air service, or you could tie it in with YouTube TV. It's unbelievable. All these things, it's easy now. It's right there. And I think people find it boring. I think that's the problem. I think the biggest, that's honestly what it is. People find it boring.
Not enough of a challenge.
No, I guess I honestly believe that. When we started doing the show, Paul, I was still using a Windows mobile phone.
Yeah.
Okay. Geez. I had a Windows Mobile 6.5. HTC Touch Pro, and I would go and get different ROMs and load the ROMs in so I could get a little bit more performance, or I could have the specific app or the look that I wanted. Now, forget it. Who's doing that? Lunatics. Right.
Yep.
It's because you're bored. That's why you're doing it. All these phones are great. Since we're on the subject, I want to talk to you about this. You pre-ordered the Samsung S20 Ultra.
Yep.
I had some hands-on with it over the weekend.
Talk to me.
I stayed downtown. I stayed at the Standard Hotel, the Standard, on the High Line, downtown Manhattan. Beautiful, overlooking the water. It was awesome. Right across the street from there is a Samsung store. And really? Yeah, it's like a Samsung. It's been there for a while. It's not really a pop-up, but it's a Samsung retailer that doesn't sell anything, and you just go in there and try everything out.
Okay.
It's wild. So they had the S20s up there, and I had some time with the S20 Ultra. So the first thing I did, obviously, was try to play around with the camera.
Yeah.
It's impressive. It's very impressive. I don't know if I would say, just from the short period I had with this phone, if it's the best camera phone on the market.
Yeah.
The ability to zoom in on images is very good. It's doing obviously some software manipulation with it, and it's able to kind of fill in the blanks. Impressive.
One of the big misconceptions about this phone, I think, out in the world involves the optical zoom. This phone does not have optical zoom. All of its zooming is hybrid or digital, which, by the way, doesn't mean it's bad, but it doesn't have 10x optical zoom. It's 10x hybrid zoom. So that's fine. The Huawei phone that I have that does the best zooming right now, I think it's 5x optical, but really to get any, if you're really zooming it, you want higher, zoom than that. And a lot of the zooming that I've done with it is really just, it's hybrid zoom or maybe digital at some point, but that's okay. That's one thing. Zooming is not the only use for a camera,
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of neat when it's there. It's kind of like ultra wide mode. Like, I like that it's there. It's not the deal breaker, but it's one of the things. One of the reasons I'm interested in this camera, this phone, is that I feel like Samsung has finally gotten the memo on camera quality. It doesn't mean that it's going to be perfect, because they always kind of mailed it in before. The Note 10 Plus came pretty close. That one does have ultra wide. That works well. It can take great pictures. The problem with that phone is kind of the same problem with the iPhone. It doesn't consistently take great pictures. Like, a lot of the pictures just come out kind of flat and bland. And the night mode stuff on the Samsung side, I understand what they're trying to do. It's probably acceptable to most people, because the goal for most people is, it's a dark room, you're in a bar, restaurant, whatever it is. I want to light up the scene. I don't want to have a flash. And it accomplishes that. It's just that night mode on Huawei or Google or even Apple now is better. Just the quality is better. So I have realistic expectations, given my Samsung experiences in the past. But part of the rationale for me buying this is that my wife's due for an upgrade. She's a Samsung user. So if this doesn't work out for her.
Playing around with the phone, it's very fast, obviously. Yep. Super, super fast phone.
What do you think? Flat display now, right?
Very.
They're not going with the curved edges anymore.
No, they're not, which is bizarre. The bigger one is a little curved. There's a little curve on it.
A little curve. But I think what we've cut, it's a technological feat to have a curved screen. It was, for a little while, an interesting differentiator. Samsung being Samsung, they tried to, have it have some use. They had these edge swipe things that, by the way, don't require a curved screen, but to kind of justify it. And the animation of those panel things coming up over the edge was kind of cool.
Yeah.
But it's a serious problem for reliability and durability. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think I this might be the beginning of the end on that.
Plus everyone's doing it. I like it a lot. It's a really nice device. It feels good in your hand. Super thin.
Yeah. What do you think about the size of it?
Going from this, this is a gigantic phone.
That's the max.
The max. It's a really big phone. So this feels heavy also. So yeah, it is heavy.
The iPhone's very heavy.
Yeah, it's tremendously heavy. So this, I you know what? I should have done like the comparison. It felt good. It felt good in my hand.
Yeah.
This kind of says a lot about the Note and how the Note is really not necessary for most people.
Yeah, it's become sort of superfluous.
This kind of was a nail in a coffin for it. Now the camera, though, I got to tell you, it It has the same problem that all the Samsung cameras have, and it's that it's almost. And I know people are going to get really mad when I say this. And I have an S10, I had an S9, I had an S6, and an S7. It's almost like there's like this film. It's a little yellowy. I mean, you could tweak it. You could tweak the white balance, and you could get that photo. But when you take it out and you do one of these.
Yeah, you just want to take a snapshot and you want it to be right every single time. Yeah.
There's almost like it's a
warmer
color.
This is where Samsung has fallen apart for me. It's not, you can take a great photo, but you have to babysit it.
Yeah. Sometimes
it just works.
It's still there, but it may not be when you have it. I was essentially in a warehouse with like really weird fluorescent lighting.
I wouldn't be surprised if this was true. It's still Samsung. I mean, they still have their software. It's, you know, we'll see.
I'll give an example. Do you see how, and obviously this is not a fair comparison because I'm using a $3,000 Sony camera right now, okay? That you're looking at me on. This shot right here.
Mm-hmm.
You know how, do you see how like it doesn't look, the white balance is fine.
Yep.
The white balance is there. It's able to kind of separate the colors and the depth. I feel like with the Samsung cameras, that goes away, and obviously we're not talking the same comparison, but I feel that on my iPhone, if I were to mount it in that same shot, it is a closer representation without any kind of tweaking.
But you saw at the Samsung event, they recorded and streamed that off of their own devices.
They did, and it looked really
good. I thought that was pretty cool. We can all make fun of them or whatever, and maybe, you know, I'm sure whatever they did with them, but I think that's really neat.
It is very
That's
neat.
The type of thing, if Apple had done, the press would have fallen over themselves.
Oh, it would have been all
high-fiving
over the
each
place.
Other. Yeah. You know? Oh, yeah. It would have been the biggest news story in the world.
The high-fiving each other always gets me because I picture them every time.
Oh, you just know it's just a giant circle jerk in that audience. It's just, it's like a conga line.
I think what you're going to like the most, because you were a big fan of this feature on the Nokia phones, was the fact that you could kind of zoom in and crop, and it doesn't. Yeah. Destroy the image. Yeah. That's the most impressive part. So I'm on the second floor, and the guy actually let me take it out of the case. I told him, like, I do What the Tech, and he actually knew the show. He knew your website. Oh. Very nice guy.
He's like,
you want to? I know. I should have been like, you want to give it to me? He's like, you want to walk around with it? Walk around with it.
$1,400. I just thought.
I know. You know what? I wouldn't have taken it anyway from them. I made that mistake early on, and I would have AT&T send me all these phones, and they're like, yeah, keep it. Don't worry about it. And the first bad review I gave, they shunned me. So I got blackballed from them. So I don't accept these phones. I'll do a barter with certain companies. I try not to do it for the phones, in all honesty. But he let me walk around with this phone around the place. And I have to tell you, so I stood on the stairs, and Jess was all the way at the other end. And I took a photo, and I zoomed in. And I was like, man, it looks phenomenal. I mean, obviously, once you zoom in more and more, it kind of falls apart.
Have you seen the photos on Twitter that people do, like, the four shots, and then the last one, the guy's holding a sign that you can read now, but and then the original, he's not even a dot, you know?
I did, and it's very similar to that, actually, to be honest.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it's a great step forward. This is why it's 108 megapixels. You know, it's for that ability to kind of stand back and take photos. So my hotel, and I thought about this, what a great test this would have been. My hotel looking out of the window, because it's floor-to-ceiling windows, on the left side, faces the Statue of Liberty in the distance. It's far, but it's there.
Right.
And I actually zoomed in on my phone to kind of see at what point can I still see it and does it fall apart. So here's an example. I mean, I'm going to hold it up to the camera here. And this was not the camera, but this is on the iPhone. This is tremendously zoomed in, by the way. Let me do this. So, I mean, you can kind of see there's the Statue of Liberty. So if I had that camera, I'm curious how clear this would have been.
Well, so someone did do a Statue of Liberty shot, right, with those. And you get it gets really close, but it's super blurry. And blurry is not even the right word. You know, it's one of the
hazy
fruit flies in here for some reason. Must be the corpse I left in the corner. I don't know what you call it.
John Foster, was that your house?
Yeah, Jeff. It was like a like that digital effect where it's smooth, but it's, you know what I mean? Like it's smooth. It's not blurry, but it's not representative. It's just a blurry. I don't know. Blurry is not the right word, but anyway, you do get a lot closer. I'm curious. I've done a lot of Zoom stuff with the you know, the Huawei phone, and the Huawei will do 50x. I guess it's probably purely digital at that point, but you know, and you're going to want a tripod for it to be as good as it can be, et cetera, et cetera. But it does good zoom. And you must have seen the picture, excuse me, I took of the moon on Instagram.
Yeah.
That was Huawei. And it was zoomed somewhere between 30 and 50X. And it, you know, and I just put it on the railing of the hotel thing there. And it wasn't a tripod or whatever, but it came out great.
Samsung actually has a very detailed camera breakdown for you to see how good the camera is. But unfortunately, as I'm pulling up the website again, it's the images are broken. It doesn't load on their website. So perfect timing for that. Let me see if I got another one ongoing review. There might be another one here. So this is the one. Actually, it's the same person that did those tests. Jessica Dalcourt, I think. Jessica Dalcourt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's actually very impressive, but I could still see. I'm looking at this and having a Samsung phone for so long, I know that these are taken on a Samsung.
Yeah,
just the way that the photos look, it's wild. Yeah, I could tell you, if you were to tell me that these photos were taken on a Google phone, on a Pixel, I would tell you, no, you're wrong. I would be able to spot this instantly. It's just, it feels like it's a Samsung. The whites are weird. I don't know why. The white balance is off on it. But listen, it's a great phone. This is a major leap forward. I'm curious what Apple is going to answer with.
Yep.
If they're going to start, if we're going to have a new battle of the megapixels.
I feel like Apple made such a big leap this past generation that they don't have. I mean, they could do some basic improvements to optical zoom, and that might be enough. You know, I don't feel like they. I don't know.
I'm going to tell you, because at the end of the day, it's a numbers game. It's a numbers game at the end of the day. People see numbers and they go, well, that has to be better. And when you have a phone, and I'm not saying that people that are going to buy an iPhone are going to be they're going to go and buy a Samsung now. But if you see this and the person in the store, because these are not very highly trained people in the Verizon store, AT&T store,
right?
And they tell you, they're like, well, you know, cameras are important to me. And they go, well, did you see that the Samsung is 108 megapixels? You're going to probably end up with that.
Yeah, but you got to look at all the cameras, all the lenses. Like some of them are just 12 megapixels. So, you know, they have this, I don't know. Specs don't mean anything. We have to see how this works in the real world.
Yeah. Even at the end of the day, though, Paul, I mean, even mid-range phones are taking pretty decent photos now. I think it's amazing how much stuff we're documenting.
I used the Pixel 3 AXL. About a month ago, and that thing, it takes phenomenal photos. You could buy that for right now for probably $300.
Yeah,
it's a great phone. You know,
you're not ordering the flip phone, the Galaxy Z or the Motorola original phone?
I like the idea of it. It's not for me.
You came around. You came around to it.
What do you mean by that?
You've softened up your opinion of these phones.
No, I never had an opinion about this kind of phone.
No.
An old school flip phone is stupid. That's the thing I think you're thinking about. A phone that flips open to a normal phone, but then is like half sized and you can put it in your pocket, that's fine. It just needs to be able to survive the folding and unfolding. And
yeah.
coins.
Which we don't really know real world testing.
The first version's not going to be that, but I mean, second, third, fourth, whatever, they're going to get that. Yeah. I saw that thing, and I actually showed it to my wife, and I don't normally do that with tech stuff, but I said, you know, there's something about this. I thought, you know, you might actually like this, you know? And she was like, yeah, she goes, that's actually really cool. She's like, the thing I would find even more useful is if you had like a normal phone and you open it up and it was like two screens. I was like, well, they're making those too. So,
which one stands out? Nick in our chat, super user, had asked, what type of foldable is the best in your opinion? The Mate XS, the Galaxy Fold, or the flip phone? I don't know. I think the Motorola is appealing because it's technically a Razr and they kind of went with that. But the Galaxy, Galaxy,
least appealing.
You don't think so? Is that really your least appealing one?
Yeah, by far. Yeah. The appeal of the Z Flip or whatever that's called. And I see the appeal of, well, I would say the Huawei Mate X style is the one that's going to win out, where you don't have another goofy kind of second screen on the outside that's there when it's closed. Like it's one screen, I guess you kind of close it on the outside. It opens up to two things. I mean, again, there's a lot of durability stuff that needs to be figured out there. But I think that's the design that wins out in the end. They just have to figure out the durability stuff.
Yeah. Very interesting. All right, Paul, let's wrap it up. Are you available to do a bonus show?
Yep, and then I'm available to take a nap because I have been up for since 4 o'clock in the morning. I don't know what the hell's going on.
Not fun. All right, guys, go to the website, gfknetwork.com. If you enjoy the show, fund us on Patreon, patreon.com/whatthetech. You could go there for our bonus content that we record each and every week. If you're watching this live, stay tuned. You're going to be able to watch the bonus show here with us. If you're listening to the podcast, go to patreon.com/whatthetech and get our show there. Also, you can get our podcast on therot.com and, of course, on gfqnetwork.com and everywhere podcasts are available. Therot.com for Therot Premium. Go sign up. All this amazing content on there each and every day. And we'll see you all next time. Take care.